We are so thankful for you, our Family Life community. Your partnership just helps us reach so many families with God's truth and hope. Would you consider giving to keep it going? If so, visit familylifetoday.com or call 800-FL-TODAY. That's F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today.
For many parents that are out there of adult children, what frustrates you the most about your kids right now is they are actually pushing away a control that you are trying to exert in a place that you do not have the ability to exert it. And if you will back off trying to control and begin to try to influence, you'll actually get more influence, which can in part lead to more control.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Dave Wilson.
And I'm Ann Wilson. You can find us at familylifetoday.com. This is Family Life Today. I'm super excited to have Kevin Thompson back with us because, Kevin, you've
back
been...
Back is like... Yeah. It's been, what, 5 years?
It has been.
Okay, so I'm going to start you off with a little question.
Okay.
Okay, because I know you've had a lot of these questions, and especially what we're going to talk about today, this could be very typical for you. So let's say a family comes to you, you're a pastor, but you also help counsel a lot of people. So a family comes into you, it's a mom and a dad, and their son... who they love, they adore, and their son's dating a girl that the mom's like, I don't think she's the best one for you.
Yeah.
But the son is madly in love with her.
Yeah.
And they want you to come and solve the problem. And the mom's thinking, Pastor Kevin's going to side with me.
Yeah.
So what do you say to this family?
Yeah. So often in that scenario where let's say parents really want to interject their opinions on what's going on.
You think?
I always say this. You absolutely, this is exactly what you should have done when your child was 12. But what happens is now the son is college age, older in their 20s. And here's the reality. It is not your business unless you are asked.
Oh, every parent's like, wait. No, Kevin, you don't know our scenario. This girl's not even a Christian.
Yeah, we know better.
Surely it's my job because I love him or we love him.
And the truth of the matter, Dave, is you do know better.
Yeah.
That's what's so difficult about it, is that you do know better. You know the consequences of it. Isn't this the amazing thing about parenting? The older they get... the less power we have...
It's terrible.
The greater the consequences of their own decision-making.
Yes.
Right? We have a dinner table, much like this one. So I have two kids. And I tell them all the time, there's 6 chairs at the table. We didn't plan it this way. It just turned out this way. But I tell them regularly, 17-year-old, now 20-year-old. But I've said this for a long time. Who sits at these other 2 chairs is up to y'all. Individually, you will each choose who you marry, who you're in a relationship with. And as long as it is not a safety issue, that person will be welcome to our table. You just need to recognize it will have an impact on the whole, but in the end, it's up to you. Now, I want to create a relationship where they will talk to me and ask my opinion and all those kind of things, but I do not have the right to interject myself into a scenario where I haven't been invited in when ultimately that's their decision, not my decision.
And is that what you would tell that mom and dad?
That's what I have told many a mom and dad. I mean, I literally, great family. They come in and kids are home for the summer and they're struggling a little bit with the kids were gone and now they're back.
Yeah.
And how do we deal with all of that? And we're having a very good conversation in which I'm saying, look, your kids, they went away to college. They're used to having freedom. I think you need to give them that kind of freedom. At the same time, kids, look, you need to recognize you're adults now. So you're coming back in this house. If you were to spend the night with me, there's no way you'd come in at 3 o'clock in the morning because it would be rude as my guest to do that.
Yeah.
And so you need to act like an adult. They need to treat you like an adult. But in the midst of that conversation, just a passing comment came up in which the mom just said, hey, you know, he was dating this girl and I didn't like her. And I'm like, well, yeah. I said, so the relationship's over. Yes, the relationship's over. I said, no, there's nothing wrong. You do not have to like the girl your son is dating by any means. I said, no, you know, obviously you can't tell him that. And there was like a, and she's like, what? And I said, wait, you told him? Well, yeah, no, I thought he needed to know. I said, no, He's 28. Like you do not get to interject. Again, if he were 12, absolutely. But there's been a transition that has happened. He is now a man. He is in charge of his own decision making, and he's in charge of who he includes in the process of making those decisions. And if you do not respect his ability to make his own decisions, you will actually, not only will you not have the control that you want, you'll actually lose the influence that you desire. But if you will respect his ability to make that decision and show those boundaries, my guess is that relationship will grow. He'll start to invite you into places that right now you're trying to force your way into.
I get it at 12. When does it end?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And so these changes. So, right. So in Stay in Your Lane, we're using the image of driving down the road.
Yeah,
right?
This is.
Hey, by the way, we haven't even mentioned this is the book, Stay in Your Lane. And by the way, subtitle, Worry Less, Love More, and Get Things Done.
I always say it's the easiest book you've read since Goodnight Moon, because this is not complicated stuff. But we use this image of driving in lanes. And you think about how a road is marked in different ways. That if there's a dash, you get to swerve over back and forth. No, you can change lanes however it is that you want to change lanes. If there's a double yellow line, you have to stay in your own specific space.
Do you hear that?
I always do. You're the one.
Stay in your own specific
Sometimes
space.
There's a solid yellow line with a dashed line, which means one lane can come over easily. The other lane actually can't come over. So whenever I think about this, when my kids were born, so what's mine, what's theirs, what's God's? Those are the three lanes.
What's mine, what's theirs, what's God's?
When my kids were born, everything was either in my lane or God's lane. My kids had no control whatsoever. Right. But about the age of two, about the time they learned the word no, I need to start taking things out of my lane and handing it over to them so that they can learn to control their own life, have their own sense of agency, learn how to make decisions, learn that their choices have consequences that go to them. Now, there's some things I might hand over that I have to take back. They're not ready for, right? So I don't think there is a specific age or marker. I think it is in the development of the child, but to look at. If a parent is not every single day taking something out of their lane and putting it into their child's lane, then that is stunting the growth of the child, and it's going to begin to hinder the relationship. Now, if you move something over too quickly, that will also hinder the child and will eventually make the relationship difficult as well. But I think every single day, my kids are trying to get more responsibility of their lives, and I need to hand that over to them.
I mean, where we started, though, parents do not like this idea that I'm staying in my lane with their adult kids. It is a real battle. There are a lot of adult kids that say, my mom and dad are still telling me what to do. And what happens to that relationship when that doesn't stop?
Yeah, well, we all have this temptation, right, to swerve into a lane that is not ours.
And I still do it all the time. Yeah. I did it last week with a 34-year-old son who's having some stomach issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's eating an ice cream cone. His wife is sitting right beside him. So I say to him, oh, you shouldn't be eating that. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be eating that. It's going to kill your stomach. Mm-hmm. And he looks at me like, I'll eat whatever I want.
Yes.
But I feel like I'm helping my son.
So notice your feeling and your emotion. Notice your son's response.
Yes.
It's immediate to put the guard up and to now want to do the exact opposite of what you just said.
Yes.
So here's what I think is important for parents. I get the idea, especially parents of adult children. I get the idea we don't want this. That's fine. Let's determine what do you want. Mm. All right. So that's what's mine. What's mine is I get to choose my own desires, my own preferred outcomes. Doesn't mean I can guarantee they're going to happen. So I have to ask myself the question, what is the outcome I want? I want my child to flourish. I want to have a great relationship with them. I do not want tension in the midst of the relationship. I want to help them in every way I possibly can. I want to have as much influence on their lives as I possibly can have. How do I get that? The problem is, we then do not think of what's the best way to go about that. And we just do what comes naturally to us. And that is we try to control.
Yes.
But when you and I try to control something that we can only influence, we actually lose both. But whenever we will begin to recognize the boundaries that are there and say, okay, I can't control this. I actually have to respect the decision-making of this adult. How can I be an influence? Well, we've all had bosses to some extent. Dave, maybe you were this type of boss. I don't know. But we've all had bosses to some extent who would micromanage us.
Yep.
And whenever they would micromanage us, wouldn't respect who we are, our capabilities, our abilities, what we would do is we would actually try to go behind their back to get things done.
Yeah.
And we would exclude them from the process because we didn't want to put up with the angst. But then we also have all had bosses, and Dave, you were likely this type, that believed in us. And whenever they believed in us, an amazing thing would happen. We would actually invite them in to what was going on, because we knew if we did, they would assist us and not control
us. We want their influence.
Their influence and their input. Yeah, absolutely.
Not their control.
And so for many parents that are out there of adult children, what frustrates you the most about your kids right now is they are actually pushing away a control that you are trying to exert in a place that you do not have the ability to exert it. And if you will back off, try to control, and begin to try to influence, you'll actually get more influence, which can, in part, lead to more control. And Ann, you said a word that I think is such a trigger word for us, or should be. Should.
Yes.
When I use the word should with somebody else, what right do I have to use that word? I'm not saying every time we use it, that's a sign that we're out of our lane. We should assume whenever we use it, we are probably out of our lane.
I just erased a text this morning to some of our kids that had that word in it, and I erased it and started over. Yeah. And I reframed it. So I was like, have you thought about, because they were asking something, but man, that word, I think as our kids are younger, we're shifting into their lane continually. Mm-hmm. So to not ever use that word with our kids and even our husbands or our wives, that takes some practice to not do it. But I think it's really essential. How often as a listener are you using the word should?
And I love even the idea, first of all, you said something beautiful right there. Your child had asked, your adult child had asked you something. To even at times pause and for your first response to be, hey, thank you for asking me this. I feel so appreciative that we have this type of relationship. And please know that I will give you my opinion in a loving, compassionate way every time, but I recognize who you are as a person. I trust your decision-making. I believe in you, and I know that you will do the right thing, and it's an honor just to be one of the voices in your life.
Yeah, but you're also, you know this, you've got the parent who, you know, with their adult kids, knows their son or daughter's making the wrong choice.
Yes.
Whether it's a relationship, whatever, it's like when your kid was 3 years old and a scorpion was coming toward them, you're going to step in and stomp that thing and run them away. Now they're 22 and you think that girl or that guy or that job choice is a scorpion. It's poisonous. It's going to destroy them. They can't see it. You can.
Yes.
How do you not stop it?
Exactly. What would Jesus do in that situation? Clearly Jesus would protect our children, right? Well, Matthew 19. Rich young ruler comes to Jesus, says, what must I do to be saved? Jesus says, follow the Ten Commandments. The rich guy foolishly thinks he has.
I've
done that. Now the text says, Jesus, now knowing his heart, says, sell everything you own and give it to the poor and follow me. The rich guy doesn't want to do that, turns and walks away. What does Jesus do? He lets him walk. I'm a pastor. Like I would have chased him down and said, oh, hang on, I was just kidding. What if you gave 10%? What if you gave to our building fund? Like, what if just give something today
lower
as a
standard.
Small step of obedience, right? I would have lowered the standard to manipulate the outcome that I desired. Jesus so honored this man's decision-making power that even though he was making a decision to spend an eternity apart from Christ, all the pain and sorrow that would come that way, Jesus allowed him to make that choice. Because that's how much he respected his ability to make that decision. Well, if Jesus does that with us, then shouldn't we do that with our kids? Yeah, yes, if they're in danger, all those things. We have to recognize we do have a right to speak.
Right.
But we should also recognize that whenever we do speak, there might be consequences to that. And so there might be moments in which I say to one of my adult children, hey, this is your choice, but I can't live with myself if I don't say this. Mm. But to even recognize that as I say it, the consequence of that might be that I might lose them coming to me next time. Mm. Is that big enough for this? Some issues, they are big enough. Most of them, they're not. Even the people we love have a right and an ownership to make wrong choices. And we can't steal that humanity away from them as much as it's going to hurt us and break us whenever they make those foolish choices. And so we have to just honor the decision-making ownership of other people in the same way that we want ours honored as well.
I think one of the questions I ask myself is, why do I want to get into that lane? Mm. And you know what it is? A lot of times when it comes to our kids, I worry about them when they're suffering and they're going through hard things, and I don't want to worry.
Yeah.
You're saying it's more about you than them?
I think it's that part of me that I stress out so much. Yeah. If they're sad, if they're hurting, and it weighs on me, I need to keep giving it over to Jesus. Like, just make the right decision. Yeah.
And you love them.
I love them so much.
This comes from a good place and a good intention in most areas. Right. Not every area, but in most areas. So we don't have to shame ourselves for wanting to do this, for wanting to inject ourselves in their lives. I mean, I think all the time, 17 and 20, if you would just shut up and do what I say, your life would be so much better. I mean, seriously, but would it? Because even if they get these decisions right, and they're big decisions, there's going to be a day where I'm not here. So what's more important actually is for them to learn how to make decisions, which we can only learn in part by making mistakes. The prayer that I have for my kids all the time is just, Lord, don't let their mistakes be too costly.
Yeah.
That then becomes a trust of God. And part of what's going on, Anne, I think, is we love them so much, we don't truly trust God with them.
That's it.
We want to take God's place instead of saying, I'm going to play my part. And you know what? That's between them and God, how that plays out. And I'm going to be here to love and support along the way. But ultimately, they're responsible before God for whatever they're doing.
You know, one of the areas we all know this really plays out in, because we've been talking about adult kids, but when your kids are teenagers, like you have a 17-year-old and they're in sports or they're in school, whatever. I coached high school football for 12 years. The number of parents that came to me to tell me their son should be starting instead of, you know what I mean? And and I'm going to remove them from the team because you guys don't see how good he is. It's unbelievable how they get involved.
Yeah.
And they can't let their son not be the best when it could be the best thing for them because it's going to motivate them and all these different things. Is that partly they're getting out of their lane in that area? I mean, it happens sports. It happens in everything. Now in college, they're leaving schools to go to another school because I'm not starting here. I'll go here. And sometimes that's a good decision. Oftentimes it's like, they're just not going to deal with the consequences of not getting what they want.
Yeah. When it comes to sports, players play, coaches coach, parents, parents, umpires, umpire.
Yeah.
That's the way it needs to go. That's the lane that each of them need to play.
Yeah.
So I grew up, I was a pitcher, I always loved Greg Maddux because I never could throw it fast, but I could place it wherever I wanted to. But there came a point around the age of 15, 16, where you need to be able to throw a curveball and I never could. So I became a great batting practice pitcher.
Yeah.
Right. So I stopped playing and I began to coach. And so I'm 18 years old. I'm coaching 12-year-olds. And my catcher wanted to learn how to pitch. And his dad would always bring him. And he said, hey, my son wants to learn how to pitch. He had a great arm. I said, well, let's say after practice every time we'll play and do all that. And so we did that. So next to last game of the year, my lineup's made. We're going to play this game. Everything's great. Right before the game's supposed to start, the opposing coach comes to me and says, hey, Kevin, one of our guys didn't show up. We're going to have to forfeit. I said, oh, my goodness. I said, here, well, let's go ahead and play. Everybody's here. Let's play. Let's have fun. I said, I'll give you one of my kids. And you can have a team, we have a team. So we've already won. Everything's great. We're up to bat first and, you know, we get three outs, whatever. Now it's time for our team to take the field and our pitcher's out there ready to warm up. I'm like, why is our pitcher not warming up? Our catcher isn't there. And finally, my assistant coach came up and said, hey, your catcher's leaving. And I run over and I see, and this dad is irate. Come to find out, here's what happened. He thought since the game was forfeited, this is the game where his son should have pitched. And I never thought about it. Mm. But instead of playing the whole thing out and seeing how it went, or even we had a good enough relationship, he actually could have come over to the dugout and said, hey, Kevin, since here's this game's forfeited, what do you think?
Yeah.
But instead of doing that, he took his ball and his son and went home. And I remember thinking to myself, even at the time, his dad just modeled for his son how you respond when life doesn't go your way and when an authority figure makes a decision you do not like. Mm. How's that going to work when his son is 16, 17, 18? And so he actually had an opportunity in that moment. Let's say I never thought about it, or he brought it to my attention. I said, no, he would have the ability to support his son through that whole game. When they get in the car to say, you know what, son, sometimes life isn't fair. Mm. Sometimes decisions don't go your way. You know what? Your coach is a good guy. We love him. He didn't make a good decision there. And whenever that happens, you play hard. You play the position you've been asked to play. Your opportunity is going to come. Think about the empowering nature. There's only one person in that kid's life that could play that role, and that was that dad.
Yeah. Mm.
But instead, he didn't like how I was playing my role. And so he tried to play my role.
Mm.
There comes a moment in life where you can only wear one hat, especially as dads. We coach and we're dad. We wear both hats. But in certain moments, you can only wear one. And far too many dads try to pick up the coach hat, thinking I can wear the dad hat too.
Yeah.
You can't. Sometimes you just have to be the dad.
Yeah.
But feel the empowerment of that role of what's going on.
Okay. So let's talk about CIA. You mentioned it.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating when you understand these words, how they affect the lane we should stay in.
Yeah. So, and the lanes are mine.
What's mine? What's theirs? What's God's? Yeah. So for many years as a pastor, you know, we're in all sorts of different situations and scenarios. We're in marriage and parenting and civic organizations. CEOs come to us asking for advice, how to deal with employees. So as pastors, we're in a lot of different scenarios. So for many years, I don't fully know how this was developed. But I just finally got to a point, I'd be in a restaurant, somebody would be talking about a situation, I'd take out a napkin, draw two lines, make three columns, and write what's mine, what's theirs, what's God's. I'd slide across the table, I'd say, all right, let's use this framework to look at this situation, and at minimum, it will show you your next step. It's not going to solve everything, but it will show you your next step. And everybody will look at me like, that's the dumbest thing ever. My life's far more complicated than you understand. I'm like, all right, just trust me, let's walk through the process. What's mine? So we want to control what belongs to me. What is it that I actually own? And I want to control that. What's theirs? What belongs to other people? I can't control it. I want to influence it. I want to be able to have have a say that's there, but in the end, they get to make the decision. And then ultimately, what's God's? There are some things in life that's just God's stuff. I don't get to control it. I don't even get to influence. So control, influence, accept. Control, influence, accept. I call that the CIA. You have to know the CIA because the CIA knows you, right? And so if you will begin to understand what are the things in life I control and to spend a majority of your time there, to influence where you can influence and accept where you can accept, I truly do think you can worry less, love more, and get things done. But here's what tends to happen. We tend to delegate what we control to other people, or we think we'll take care of it later because we're so confident in our own ability.
Like what? Give an example.
I think about all the time. So I'm there at Bayside Church in California, and Ray Johnston is the pastor that is there. And he wrote a book called Hope Quotient years ago. And he is one of the most hope-filled person I've ever met in my entire life. One thing Ray says all the time, the number one job of a leader is to be the most encouraged person in every room. And he says, that's your job. You control that. Hmm. And yet we tend to outsource our sense of hope and encouragement. And how do we do that? Think about it. I live in California. I ask people all the time, do you wake up this morning in California excited about what God is doing, where God has planted you, the possibility to be salt and light in the midst of this culture? Or do you buy into the cynicism of, oh, this is a dark, horrific place. We need to get out of here. We need to go to Tennessee, right? And flee this place and this God-forsaken place, right? Well, here's what happened. If you wake up every morning reading scripture, praying to God, being reminded of his sovereign plan of this world, who he has called us to be, your role that's played within that, then when God allows you to wake up in California, you are excited about the opportunity and you are encouraged about the opportunity to influence culture. Mm. When you don't do that, and the first thing you do every morning is wake up and scroll your favorite news media, and they're sending you an algorithm to irritate you, then you are outsourcing your sense of encouragement to somebody else that doesn't actually want you encouraged because they can't sell you as much. Discouraged people spend far more money than encouraged people. Mm. And so you're not controlling what actually belongs to you. So if you're driving down the road today, your sense of hope in who Jesus is, your sense of encouragement in what God is doing in this world today, your own sense of self is fully your responsibility. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling. That is yours. You cannot outsource that to somebody else because if you do, you're actually now not staying in your own lane.
Oh, you're playing the guitar?
Yeah. Kevin Thompson, stay in your lane. Was that a great conversation?
Yes, I love the whole thing and I'm super convicted.
And it made me think of a song. I just wrote it. You know, I could sing this to you every night. Stay in your lane. Stay in your lane.
Boo.
No, I'm not singing it to you.
Yeah, you just said
everybody.
I could sing it to you every night.
Yeah, well, maybe sometimes. Maybe I overreached. I jumped out of my lane.
Now you jumped into my lane.
Get his book, Stay in Your Lane. It's better than my song. FamilyLifeToday.com. Click on the link in the show notes. And we've got him back tomorrow.
Yeah.
And this stuff is so practical. You're going to love it. So we'll see you back next time.
If you need more on this or any kind of parenting help, you can get more at familylife.com/parentinghelp.
Family Life Today is a donor-supported ministry of Family Life, a crew ministry, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.